Welcome to the ClearAdmit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and this special episode is a continuation of our very popular Admissions Director Q&A series. Today, I am thrilled to welcome Chad Losey from Harvard Business School. Chad's title is Managing Director of MBA Admissions and Financial Aid, and in addition to leading admissions at HBS, Chad is a graduate of Harvard Business School, earning his MBA back in 2013. Chad also has an undergraduate degree in international relations from Brigham Young University and a doctor of education in higher education management from UPenn. Professionally, Chad's been at the helm of admissions at HBS for about 5 years now, I think, and he has also worked in other roles at Harvard and spent a few years working for Bain & Company too. So welcome, Chad. It's a real pleasure to have you.
Thanks, Graham. It's really great to be with you.
So as you may know, we have a whole bunch of questions to run through. And, so I really appreciate you making some time to do this. The first question, which I think will be really helpful for our listeners, is just if you could give us a kind of brief overview of your background and the kind of path that led you to this role at HBS, that would be great.
Sure. Yeah, it's great to be with all of you. So thanks again for having me. So as you mentioned, I did my undergraduate at Brigham Young University. And when I was there, I studied international relations. And I was, one of these people that gets to college and just loves being in the intellectual environment of a university. And so explored a bunch of different things. And after I graduated, I feel lucky that I got to work in consulting at Bain & Company. So I worked in that Dallas office at Bain for a couple of years. And while I was there, I met a lot of people who were going on to do an MBA. And so I wasn't necessarily set on doing an MBA when I started in consulting, but many of the people that I enjoyed working with and learning from had gone on to do an MBA. And so I think that provided the inspiration for me to do an MBA, not just to have an impact in consulting, but I saw it as a degree that could really help me get things done in a wide variety of industries and a wide variety of roles, especially at a place like Harvard where there's a real strong general management focus. I wasn't quite sure how my career would unfold, but I thought an MBA, and if I was lucky enough to go to Harvard, would really help me on a bunch of different paths. So in almost exactly 10 years ago now, Graham, I was admitted to Harvard Business School, and I still feel very grateful for receiving that offer of admission. And when I got to HBS, one of the really amazing resources that I took advantage of at the school is a career coach. So at HBS, there are about 50 or 60 career coaches that work individually with all of our students. And so I worked really extensively with a career coach in that first year to try to think about the medium and long term in my career and how I wanted things to unfold. And this coach worked with me on industries that might pique my interest, the types of roles, where my strengths and weaknesses were. And one of the things that came up in those discussions was this idea of higher education. I think I shared with her that, maybe down the road, 20 or 30 years down the road, I might like to teach perhaps part-time at a college or a community college or something like that. And she sort of drew that thread out of me and introduced me to several alumni who were working in interesting roles in higher education. And I actually was really excited about what they were doing. And so let me just sort of shortcut to where I am now. Those conversations led to an internship that I did with a president of a university. And that was a really amazing experience. And then when I graduated from HBS, I had this really unique opportunity to stay at the school for an additional year and to work as a fellow in the dean's office. And so I worked on a range of different strategic projects there. Maybe the one that is of interest to your listeners is I was part of the team that helped develop HBS Online. So this is a way that we share some of the research and the teaching at HBS with, I think it's well over 100,000 learners now since it launched in 2014. But that was a really fun kind of product management experience for me working with a really amazing team and with faculty to develop both the platform and the business and some of the ideas around the courses. So I did that for a year, and then I went back to consulting for 2 years. And then after that, I knew I had some pretty strong conviction that I wanted to work in higher education at that point. And so I actually, when I went back to to consulting. I got to work with a university as a client. So I had a kind of interesting experience on the consulting side of higher education, and then just stayed in touch with people at HBS, and I saw this role come open in admissions, and applied and feel really lucky that they hired me for the job. Admissions is something that I was really intrigued by. Actually, as a student, I was an admissions ambassador for my section. So I, you know, helped the admissions team a little bit and hosted prospective students who were coming through to visit class or to learn more about HBS. So in a lot of ways, it felt like coming home, both to the institution that I had just grown so much at, but also to the team where I had been pretty involved as a student. So I think that sort of leads me to where we are today.
Yeah, what an interesting journey. I'm really thankful that you shared that, because I feel like for a lot of MBA applicants, you know, they're in the process of like thinking through their plans and, you know, writing essays about career goals or, and it's all a little bit of I think for many of them, it's kind of, you know, they're trying to figure this stuff out, and it's always helpful to sort of hear, you know, how someone's path evolved and, really interesting. And I think it's great that you were involved as a student. I know I actually did the same thing when I was at Wharton and was similarly kind of bitten by the admissions kind of bug and love higher ed and all that stuff. So, all right, so you clearly love your work, and so I think this will be easy when I ask you this question, but I want to know, like, what is something that you really like about your current job?
Yeah, so this is a thread that goes back to, you know, being an admissions kind of volunteer as a student, but I love the people that I get to meet. So people from all over the world, people who, I mentioned I studied international relations, so, you know, I'm want to sort of talk about local politics all over the world with people who grew up in different places, people who worked in different industries and just have different interests. I would say for me, that's one of the biggest highlights, is just getting to know the people who are considering HBS, who apply to HBS, who interview with us. So every step of the process, I feel really lucky to meet really interesting people that I get to learn from. And I feel like that's a really great way for me to stay on top of what's happening in the world and what management teams are facing and where great talent is going is through the people that I get to meet.
Yeah, well said. I feel like, you know, business schools by nature attract such a broad spectrum of individuals from all kinds of, you know, corners of the world and functions and industries. And it's really a rich place to kind of sit and see, you know, candidates go by. So now I have to ask you, though, is there something that you don't like about your job?
Let's see. Well, I still, I confess, I still get nervous on podcasts or media interviews like this. So maybe I would put that on the list as, you know, not generally loving the spotlight on me and still feeling a little nervous for interviews like this. So thanks for going easy on me, Graham.
All right. Okay. What about, give me an HBS stereotype that you want to debunk? Because I think there are a lot out there for all schools, but I think there's some for HBS. But is there anything that you want to, you know, kind of tell our listeners is not true about the school?
So one thing that we encounter in admissions is this sense when I'm talking to people or when I sort of hear the question behind the question, which is that there's, quote unquote, a certain type that we're looking for in the admissions process. So maybe a certain career path or a certain university or a certain background that we're looking for. And while it's true that we're looking for people who are really curious, really talented, or interested in leadership, and definitely interested in investing in the people around them, it's not true that we're looking for one particular type of applicant. So in the class that's coming in the fall, we have people from about 300 different universities all over the world, from about 70 different countries, from hundreds of companies and different roles. We have people from different income and socioeconomic backgrounds, and they have different lived experiences. And, you know, although we are looking for exceptional people, we want people who bring a different perspective than their classmates. And in part, that's because of our learning model, where the students are really at the center of things. You know, most of what is said in a Harvard Business School classroom, where we primarily use the case method, is spoken by the students. And so rather than just sort of sitting back and listening to a professor at the front of the room, our students are expected and bring their own perspective on what's going on in this business and what should be done. And the learning really comes out inductively through this discussion among people who are talented, but come at problems in different ways. So as an admissions team, we're explicitly not looking for just one type of person. So I hope that people will believe me when I say that, because I think sometimes there's this myth out there that you have to have worked at a certain company or come from a certain place to be a competitive applicant. And we're really looking to get to know you individually and the voice that you would bring to the program.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I feel like the case method necessitates kind of a diversity of viewpoints and things. So, and we'll get into that. I actually had a question about the case method coming up here. So hopefully you'll talk a little more about that too. What's one thing that's happening or maybe is going to be happening at HBS, like on campus, that you wish people knew more about?
So I'd love to highlight the work that we are doing on racial equity at the school. I think, you know, this work predates the killing of George Floyd, but has definitely been accelerated in the last year. And so I feel really humbled to have been a part of a greater effort that involved many alumni, students, faculty, and staff. We had a Dean's Anti-Racism Task Force that ran for several months last year, and in September made really strong public commitments about what we can do, not just for our own community on advancing racial equity, but also recognizing the, with humility, the place that HBS plays in the broader kind of business school landscape. So I'd love to highlight some of those things. For instance, we have a new Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer, Terrell Drake, who's going to be starting in September. One of the ways that we sort of have influence beyond just HBS is through the cases that are written by our faculty members. So the cases that are written at HBS are sometimes taught at other business schools, and I believe the statistic is that 80% of cases taught at business schools around the world, both sort of undergraduate and graduate, were written by Harvard Business School faculty. And so the kinds of businesses and problems, and especially the business leaders that are highlighted in those cases, can have an influence on what business students are studying around the world. So one of the things that our student association and our African American Student Union sort of led last year was it was called a Juneteenth Pledge, where they worked closely with faculty members who sort of pledged to write a case with a Black or African American protagonist. And so over the last year, 70 cases have been written with a Black or African American protagonist, 50 more are in process, and 90 cases with Latinx, Asian, or Native American protagonists are sort of in process right now as well. So I think that is a place where we know that that will have an impact within HBS as those cases go into the curriculum and students see more diverse examples of business leaders. But we hope that that will have influence at other places as well. Within admissions, we just rolled out a need-based application fee waiver, and we've rolled out a new scholarship that stacks on top of our need-based scholarships to recognize students who have worked on advancing racial equity in underserved communities before they applied to HBS. And we've made adjustments to the financial aid formula to really account for socioeconomic background. So those are a few of the things that we've been working on and some of the efforts that we have underway on advancing racial equity. There's a bunch more that are all listed that relate to research and our faculty diversity and work that we're doing within our own community. But I would say that's some of the most important work happening at the school right now.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just to underline this, I actually remember when I went to business school and, you know, I didn't go to HBS, I went to Wharton. But when I got there and they started giving us cases to read, they were all Harvard cases. And I remember being like, hey, why do our cases say Harvard Business School? You know, it's just like an interesting thing. And I learned all about how, you know, Harvard is the one sort of producing the cases that are taught, as you say, across many business schools. And I feel like putting underserved communities and underrepresented folks in the protagonist role in these cases is a great way to just, you know, take action and yeah, let people see that, you know, there are other types of leaders out there. And so that's great. I'm just thrilled to hear that. I did not know that that was happening. So very cool. Let's shift gears. I want to talk a little bit about the life of an application. Candidates spend so much time, you know, working on their materials and submitting them. And I feel like HBS does a fantastic job of keeping this process pretty transparent. But if you'd bear with me, would you be willing to kind of just walk us through, like, what happens when someone presses submit? If, you know, like, how does the process work behind the scenes?
Yeah.
And what, you know, from like when they submit to, you know, when they get a final offer or something.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember what it's like to be on the other end of this and to work so hard and do all of the reflection and then to sort of hit that button and say, okay, I'm not sure what happens next. So happy to try to talk through this. I guess the first thing I would say is we think of the application process as a two-way kind of street or process where we're doing our very best to get to know you, and we're also trying to do our very best to help you get to know Harvard Business School and the community that you would be joining if you decide to join with us. So there's sort of things that we have purposefully tried to put throughout the process that I'll highlight as well, so that you can get to know the school as well as we're getting to know you, because we recognize that you're probably applying to more than one place. And as you're doing the reflection about your own goals and your own self and where you'd like your career to unfold, you're thinking about which school and which program and which community will best help you meet those. So when you submit an application, on our end, each application is read by two different members of the admissions board. So these are people who are highly trained, and we do a lot of training and calibration and work every year. And many of them are very experienced and have been doing this for a long time. And so we're familiar with the companies and the paths. And if we don't happen to know the path that you've been on so far, we'll do a lot of research to make sure that we understand as much as we can. So each application is read in full by two different members of the admissions board. We don't like split up parts of the application or anything like that. And each one they work together to decide which applicants we can move forward to the interview stage in our process. So we have a really intensive reading period where we're all pretty much heads down and only focused on reading and getting to know you as the applicant. And we're using all of the pieces of the application to try to get to know you as well as we can. So understanding your job history and your resume, what your recommenders have said, your academic background, and then, of course, what you've shared in your essay, which on our end is very open-ended on purpose and provides a lot of latitude for people to share what's important to them with us. So those who are invited into the interview stage, that's typically comes about 4 to 6 weeks after the initial application is submitted. We'll send out an interview invitation, and we always let people know what the date is. So shortly after we start reading, we'll let people know, here's the date that you'll hear from us on. So it won't be, up in the air. We'll give you an exact date and time when you'll know whether you are invited to interview or not. Mm-hmm. And then once we send out interview invitations, there's usually a little bit of time between, you know, when those invitations go out and when we actually start interviewing. So you have time to arrange your schedule and pick an interview slot that's going to work for you. And then on our end, we're also arranging as much as we can on our side. So one of the things that we like to do to everyone whom we invite to interview, we offer the chance to connect one-on-one with a Harvard Business School alumna or alumnus. Mm-hmm. And most people who interview opt into that. It's not part of the evaluation process at all, so it's fine if you don't want to opt into that. But what we felt like, we introduced this a few years ago, and we felt like this was a great opportunity for people to just get a personal experience and a personal conversation with an alum to learn about what the experience might be like for them if they come to HBS. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we try to match people up who have similar career interests or path, and those are usually pretty fun conversations that the alumni and candidates have on their own. And again, that's completely separate from the evaluation process. We don't ask for any input from the alumnus or alumna on the candidate. It's purely meant to be helpful to the candidate. Mm-hmm. The interview itself, I confess, is my favorite part of the process. We finally get to meet the person whom we've been excited and been learning about over the past several weeks through the application. And on our end, we actually do a lot of preparation. I sometimes think of this a little bit like how you would prepare for a case method class, where, you know, you make sure you've read the case, you understand the business, you understand, you know, the questions that might come up, and you walk into the room trying to be ready. And so the preparation that I do for an interview is I read the whole application. Mm-hmm. If I, you know, say I'm going to be talking with someone from a company or an industry that I may not be as familiar with, I'll try to read up on that company or industry, try to understand what's happening, because I want to walk into that room ready to be a good conversationalist with the person I'm going to be interviewing. Right. I want to be able to ask good questions that can help us get beyond the surface level of, you know, what's on your resume and that sort of thing. So the interview typically tends to go pretty fast. It's a 30-minute interview, and all of the interviews are conducted by a member of the admissions board. So there are about 25 of us who conduct the interviews, and it's a highly trained group that does quite a few interviews every year. Mm-hmm. And again, each of them will have access to the full application. And so, I think people who are applying shouldn't be surprised if someone, you know, asks about something they wrote about in the essay or something that was in one of the short answer questions through the application. And our overall goal in the interview is just to get to know the candidate better. And also, I would say, to just try to imagine that person in one of our classrooms, in our community. What kind of leadership roles would they take on campus? So we're just going to get into a dialogue and see where things go from there. The last step in our process, so after an interview, we'll write up our notes. We do that immediately after the interview. Those go in your file. And then the last thing that goes in an applicant's file before the final decisions come out is this post-interview reflection. Mm-hmm. So, you know, reflection is really built into the whole experience at Harvard Business School. We want you to learn not just a lot about business, but a lot about yourself and what guides you and what is going to bring you meaning and purpose throughout your life and career. And so at the end of the admissions process, we want you to reflect on, you know, how did the interview go from your perspective? Anything else you'd like to add, or anything perhaps that you've learned about yourself throughout the process? It's explicitly not an extra essay, although I know I've heard from some that it can feel like that. We hope that people will take a really informal approach and really help us just be honest with us in the reflection about how it went and anything that they've learned about themselves along the way. And then on our end, the last thing, so we'll read those post-interview reflections. We take into consideration both what we learned in the interview and in the written application as we make final decisions. At this stage of the process, almost everyone is quote-unquote qualified to be there, has the academic preparation and the inclination to be successful at HBS. And our task at that point is one of crafting a really diverse class of students who bring different talents, different perspectives, and different ideas about how to move forward. And that really powers the case method and powers our community. It's just what we can learn from people who are different from us and have different experiences than us. And then the decisions go out after that.
Yeah. So I appreciate you kind of walking us through that. I think it's really helpful for candidates to hear about this. I will say, I think when you pour your heart and soul into an application and then you go to an interview and the interviewer has taken the time to really, you know, read through everything and have a kind of more in-depth discussion with you about your background and things, I feel like that's a great opportunity for the candidate. I think sometimes it's hard for candidates when they go to an interview where they're sort of starting over, you know, because they feel like, wait, I've already told you, the school, everything about me, but the right. interviewer, you know, a lot of schools just interview resume based or something. So I think it's a really nice thing that you guys do, but obviously a lot of work goes into that in terms of you know, you're mentioning you have to prepare on your end too. So,
yeah. And I remember being an applicant, you know, I was very nervous walking into my interview and it's sort of surreal. The room that I interviewed in is across the hall from the office that I have now at HBS. And so I'm reminded continually of what it's like to be an applicant and to really want to be at a place like HBS. And we try to keep that in mind throughout, that we know that these are, the people are putting a lot of personal details and personal heart into each one of these. And we do our best to try to help people feel at ease and not nervous in the interviews. But that's a real part of things, and we understand that too.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes sense. So let's talk a little bit about the application itself. And in particular, you guys have an essay. If there was a tip that you had to offer up here for people approaching, you know, the application essay, what would it be? And I mean, the thing that jumps out at me that I meant to tell you is the fact that there's no word limit, but you don't have to speak to that. But is there anything you want to give them in terms of advice? And I feel like when people see that no word limit, sometimes they're like, ooh, what, that's new. You know, most schools have a limit. So that's can be kind of like daunting, I would think. But
yeah, our goal is to just give applicants as much freedom as possible. So our prompt is, we can see everything else in your application. What more would you like us to know as we consider you to be at HBS? And so I guess my advice would be to just be as authentic as possible. It probably won't suffice to just have one draft. I mean, I remember going through the application process and setting aside time for reflection and introspection. What were the formative experiences that I had? What were my core motivations? And those weren't necessarily something that I had spent a lot of time thinking about beforehand. And I was in a busy job, and we know that people who are applying are in very busy jobs. And the application process can give you a reason to sort of step back and reflect on what you've learned so far, where you're headed, what has shaped your experiences. And that's really what we're looking for in the essay. So, and it sort of goes back to what I was saying about one of those stereotypes in the beginning, that we're looking for a certain type and we're actually not. The essay is a really great spot for you to be able to showcase what makes you you and how you're approaching your career and this application. If you get to the end of an essay and you think it could potentially describe a colleague that you have or someone else that you know, then I think you need to do a little bit more work to just be authentic and share as much as possible with us to help us get to know you. Some people, there's really no formula to be successful in the essay. People take very different approaches. And as long as it's additive and helps us get to know you better, then you're on the right track.
Okay, good advice. So we talked a little bit about the admissions interview and how it works. I guess the one question I wanted to ask you about that, though, is what would you say for someone who's been invited to interview and is thinking about that process? Like, is there something they should do? I mean, you mentioned you read the file at length to get ready. What should they be doing? Should they go back and read their application too?
Actually, yes, that's my advice. You know, if you Google Harvard Business School interview questions, my guess is you would find hundreds of questions.
Sure.
And the reason for that is we don't ask the same set of questions to each applicant. These are really tailored interviews to you because we're trying to get to know you beyond, you know, the surface of your resume. And so I would say my best advice for the interview is just read through your application, because that's going to be the jumping off point for the conversation that we have. And then we'll see where things go from there. And then just, I would say, stay curious, listen really attentively in the interview to what we're really asking, and just try to be a good, try to really give us a sense of who you are. I think the time when people sometimes get tripped up is often when they're over prepared for an interview.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is they've come in with the, you know, 37 bullet points that they'd like to get across in the interview. And it makes it hard to have a conversation with that person and really understand, like, okay, in a more unscripted environment, like our classrooms, where we need some dynamism and people thinking on their feet and really listening to what others have said before they jump in, if you come in with a prepared list of bullet points that you want to get across, we can't get a sense for you and how you would be in the classroom. So I would say, you know, try to do whatever you do to relax before your interview, and maybe the night before read through your application, and then just come prepared to talk about you and have an applicant and have a conversation about you.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense to me. So we talked about this a little bit too, about this post-interview reflection that you guys ask for.
Yeah.
And you've been doing it for a little while. And I just wanted to know, like, what was the impetus for this, and how do you and your colleagues sort of use it? Like, what are you looking for, I mean, because it's a exercise that I don't think any other school engages in. So it's very unique. So yeah, where did it come from?
Well, maybe can I ask you a question first, Graham?
Yeah.
So have you ever been in an interview, job interview or otherwise, where you walked out of it and felt like, wow, I nailed it. There's nothing I would change about that interview.
No. In fact, I'm thinking about my MBA admissions interviews. You know, you kind of walk out and you're like, oh, you know, I wish, you know,
yeah.
You know, I didn't have 37 bullet points that I wanted to convey, but, you know, it was sort of like, oh, I didn't get to talk about this one thing, or, you know, I could have, you know, expanded on this or that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I had the same experience in my MBA interviews or job interviews that I've had over the years, where I just sort of replayed in my head. This is a chance for applicants to really have the last word, to say, hey, you know, I'm really glad we got to talk about this, but we didn't get to talk about this other thing. And that's really important to me. Or, mm-hmm. you know what, over the arc of the last few months, as I've put together this application and in the interview, here's something that I'm learning about myself. So we hope it's not overcrafted or overwritten. You don't need to go through multiple drafts. We actually require people to do it within 24 hours, but we definitely do not want people to take 24 hours to write the post-interview reflection. This should be sort of like an after-meeting sort of memo or just catch-up of like, you know, here's... It definitely does not need to be a recap of the interview. It's meant to be just more informal and reflective, and give again applicants that last word that goes in the file before we make decisions. On our end, we look at again everything in the application. So everything you've submitted in the written application, and then from the interview, we will read the interviewer's notes and the applicant's post-interview reflection. Mm-hmm. And we take all of those things together as we're trying to understand what voice and what kind of person would come to the program if we admitted this person.
Got it. Okay. So one thing that I think is so interesting about life at HBS is the way that, at least in the first year, it feels like everyone has this shared experience. You know, it's a fairly large MBA program as compared to some other programs, but, you know, you whittle things down into the sections, but the sections are all, you know, I mean, you can probably speak to this better than I can, but I just feel like there's this unique thing where everyone's reading kind of the same set of cases over the first year. And so I just would love to hear you speak about that, because I think that some applicants, they have, you know, a list of schools they want to apply to, and they don't do the digging to really understand that, like, not all these programs are the same.
Yeah.
And I feel like HBS has a really unique offering with respect to people traveling through the curriculum and having like a shared experience in the first year. So I don't know if you want to speak to that at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say HBS and other schools too, but I can just speak to HBS, but we've made distinctive choices based on our mission as a school and our goals for our students. So the mission of HBS is to educate leaders who will make a difference in the world. Mm-hmm. And we explicitly have a focus on creating great general managers. So we aspire to be a great general management program. And so what we mean by that is that people will not come out of the Harvard Business School experience as narrow or deep in just one area. We have crafted the curriculum and the whole experience to help you be ready to contribute and make a difference in any kind of industry and in any kind of role. And especially for people, which I think is, you know, it's very uncommon for someone to pick a company now and stay with that company for 40 years. People change industries, geographies, types of roles. And I think a general management curriculum is some structure now that gives you a ton of flexibility later on. Mm-hmm. So the way things are set up is, I think, a way that HBS actually kind of gives you the best of both in terms of size. So it is a big business school. We have about 900 students that come in a typical year. And so you have the benefits of scale with a large alumni base in any city around the world, a bigger network in any sort of industry, identity, regional or affinity or interest clubs, lots of faculty with deep expertise in different areas. But it's very small and tight-knit when it comes to how we structured the curriculum. So the first year, as you alluded to, everyone is put into a section of 90 students, and those students represent the overall diversity of the class within each section. Mm-hmm. And so you get to know these people really well. And I still remember in my first semester, I sat next to a woman who worked in mining in Australia, and someone who was in the military in intelligence roles for 10 years. And so these are people that I never would have encountered in life, and now we're, you know, deep friends because we were put into this really amazing section experience. Mm-hmm. So in the first year, everyone takes the same 10 classes. So it's classes like leadership and marketing and finance and operations. There's a macroeconomics class, a strategy class, an entrepreneurship class. And the idea across this first year curriculum is to prepare you to encounter any kind of business problem and be ready to tackle it. Mm-hmm. And then in the second year, you have the elective curriculum. And so you can take any class that you'd like. There's over 100 offered just at the business school. You can cross-register anywhere at Harvard University. And so you can really get depth if you'd like, or you can continue to build on the breadth in your second year, depending on how you want to structure it. But in that first year, you take all 10 of your classes with that section of 90 students. You become very close with them. And it's a very small, tight-knit, really intimate experience in the first year.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that jumps out at me always is that it feels like, you know, all 90 students are taking those classes, in the sense that when I was in business school, there were a number of people who like waived some of the basic courses and did something else, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that might have been good for them because they were able to like maybe go faster in another domain or something. But it definitely has an impact on the kind of close-knit nature. And so I think there's something really interesting about having everyone kind of travel through, because then you have the people who might be subject matter experts in something who are there and can really help in the discussion for the people who've never been exposed to that subject or something. So it just seems like a really democratic way to structure it.
It's a really good point, and it links up with, you know, this teaching pedagogy that we have around the case method. You know, we have this, about 80% of what's said in a classroom is said by the students. And so, you know, when you become a student at Harvard Business School, you're there not just to learn, but also to share your experience and what you know from your background with your classmates. And so if you're, let's just say, an expert in finance, and you tested out of the finance class, then all of your classmates are going to miss your perspective. And also you're going to miss the opportunity to sort of share something that you know deeply about with someone that doesn't know as much about that, which is, I think, a really important leadership skill for later on in your career. Yeah. And then by the same token, if you're very deep in finance, maybe you don't have any operations experience or you don't have marketing experience. And so in those other classes, you're going to rely on the people who have been in the CPG company or worked in manufacturing. Yeah. And so there is a real sense of this shared learning model, where you have something to contribute, but you also have humility about what you have to learn from your classmates as well.
Yeah, could not agree more. So I want to shift gears a little bit and ask if you have any advice about the 2+2 program at HBS, because I know we've been talking, you know, a little bit about the you know, program overall and you know, the admissions process, but 2+2 is, you know, this opportunity for candidates to apply to Harvard when they're, you know, an undergrad. But is there any, like, who should be focusing on that and, you know, versus kind of just looking at HBS as a, you know, after working for a while or something?
Yeah, 2+2 is a really amazing admissions process. It's one of the older deferred admissions processes for business schools. So it was launched over 10 years ago. Yeah. And it's a way for college seniors to apply now to Harvard Business School, to be admitted, and then to have a few years of work experience in whatever field they'd like to before they start at HBS. The way that we really focus on 2+2 is trying to broaden who we can bring into the class at HBS. There are some people who, you know, start their first job out of college and they get onto a business, they get onto a path that may not be business focused. And then, you know, they may never look around again because they're busy and life is moving fast and they have career opportunities. Mm-hmm. And so our 2+2 program is explicitly focused on creating opportunities for people to consider business school who may not already be on a path to graduate business school. So this may be that they're planning to work like in an operating company in manufacturing or CPG, retail or industrials, where fewer people tend to go to business school. Or they're from a lower socioeconomic background. Maybe they were first gen to go to college, or they had a lower income family background, or they just in their family had less exposure to graduate school. Mm-hmm. People who are going into really technically demanding roles or pursuing entrepreneurship. So this is a way for us to create an opportunity earlier in someone's path to consider business school and consider how, you know, if you have an offer of admission from HBS, how that can help you take some risks early on in your career that will help you explore what you're good at and what you're going to find meaningful for later on. So it's typically about a little over 10% of our class is admitted. So, you know, most people go through the regular admissions process, mm-hmm. but we really like the 2+2 process because it allows us to meet with college students earlier. And I think intrigue some people about how business school, especially HBS, can help them learn to get things done in the world. And that's helpful to them, but it's also helpful to their classmates because they bring very different perspectives than mm-hmm. than otherwise we might have in the classroom.
So I assume the answer is yes to this, but do you guys spread those 2+2 students across all the sections in a given year?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Makes sense.
And it's not, you know, when you're a 2+2 student at HBS, that's not apparent to everyone else, right?
Right.
I mean, I remember, you know, the first few months in my section, you know, these were people who were incredibly talented and had great perspectives. And I learned sort of later on that they had applied a few years before I did.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. So just so much information that you've shared in, across these kind of admissions-oriented questions. I thought as a fun way to end this podcast, I would hit you with a handful of just fun questions so that our listeners can get to know you a little bit.
Oh, sure.
We'll just go kind of, you know, sort of rapid fire. So I'll dive in. There's just like 10 or so of these questions. So the first one is beach or mountains?
Oh, mountains.
Okay. I figured you'd say that because I know that sometimes you spend time in Utah and there isn't a lot of beach, right? So
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Not a lot of beach or seafood in Utah. So yeah, I'm partial to mountains.
Got it. All right. Are you a morning person or more of a night owl?
Morning.
Yeah, you have kids, so do I. I think we kind of are forced sometimes to be.
Yeah, whether you choose it or not, you are a morning person.
Yeah. What about, is there a pet peeve that you have?
Let's see. I guess I would say long lines, waiting in long lines.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Favorite virtue in others?
Kindness.
Okay. What about, is there a happy place that you like to go?
I would say anything outdoors. So I love hiking in the mountains, but I'm happy just like being outside in a park or going on a walk or something. I love to be outdoors.
Okay, cool. What's your favorite sort of comfort food?
Ooh, that's a good one. Let's see. I can go through a lot of chips and salsa in a week. So I guess I would say chips and salsa.
You're killing me because that's one of like the Mexican offerings here in Paris, France are not great. And whenever I'm in America, I feel like I could eat Mexican food like every day because there's so much there and it's just not, there's nothing good here. So now I have a hankering. All right. So what about your proudest moment?
So I guess I would go to, I don't know, I guess on a professional level, one of my professors at HBS, the late Clay Christensen had this philosophy where he talked about management is a noble profession. And he shared several stories about this, about how great managers can have an impact on other people in a way that not just affects their careers, but their lives and their relationships with family or friends or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so that's like one of my highest aspirations is to be a great manager and to be sort of... To fit this kind of notion that he had about management being a noble profession. Mm. My proudest moments are the achievements that my colleagues have, that our students have. And, you know, if I can sort of be there or be a small part of their success, then that brings me a lot of pride. That's true for my kids too. So, you know, when I see them sort of set a goal or working on something, actually we're going to be running a race tomorrow, a half marathon with two of my kids. And so, you know, they've been working over the past few months to train for that. And oh, wow. I think that will be a proud moment as well.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. All right. So what about a superpower that you wish you had?
Oh, let's see. Flying. I think I would definitely go with flying. If I could fly, that would be pretty great.
You know, it's funny because, as you're aware, I've been doing these kind of Q&As with a lot of admissions directors. And that's a common response
or teleport.
You know, people talk about how they travel. They have to travel a lot, or at least pre-COVID. And so this idea of being able to like zip off somewhere without having to go through security in an airplane and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So flying is a popular superpower. So I don't know if you remember this, but have any schools ever rejected you, like when you applied to undergrad or even for business school? And if so, like, do you remember that when you're going through the process of like having to reject people who apply to HBS?
Yeah. I was definitely rejected from schools applying to college, and it hurts. Yeah. I remember that. And yes, I think that's something that I and the whole admissions board really tries to keep in mind, that every application that we read there's a person on the other end of this with hopes and dreams, and we feel very lucky that they're interested in HBS and have put so much into an application. So we very much, despite the number of applications and interviews that we do, we very much try to keep a lot of humanity in the process and are always mm-hmm. trying to look for ways to communicate that there's humans on the other side of the process too. So I think sometimes when you're applying, you're not sure how the process works. But on our end, we don't have any algorithms or minimum cutoff scores or anything like that. There's at least two humans with as much empathy as we can muster on the other end, looking at every application. So that's something we really try to keep top of mind.
Yeah, that's terrific to hear. I think, as I said earlier, I mean, people spend a lot of time kind of putting their, pouring their heart and soul into their applications. So it's nice to know, that there aren't algorithms or something making, deciding their fate.
Right.
So speaking of the process, though, if you had to skip one piece of the HBS admissions process, which piece would you want to skip?
That's a tough one, Graham.
I know, it's kind of an unfair question.
Let's see. Well, we do, we have this process every year where we go through every part of the application and the whole process and say, mm-hmm. how are we using this information and do we really need to ask it? And so every year there's changes that we make to the application, questions that we eliminate or change just to really try to keep it focused on what's helpful to us. So it's actually a pretty hard question to answer. I guess I would say, although my perspective is very different now, when I was going through the process, I was super excited to be invited to interview, but I was very, very nervous.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember arriving into Boston like 24 hours early and, bringing a favorite tie and making sure I went on a run that morning, like just to like try to calm my nerves. And I was still sort of shaking going into the admissions office. So I guess that's what I would say. Although now on the other end, it's easy for me to say this is my favorite part of the process because I just love meeting people and learning about them. But I remember that being pretty nerve-wracking when I was going through the process myself.
Well, maybe if you could have been like sort of just teleported right, like from the moment you found out you had the interview, you could just been like teleported right into the interview itself without all the like worrying and preamble stuff.
That's right.
That would have been maybe helpful. I hear you. I still remember. Yeah, I can still like picture the waiting rooms of the schools where mm-hmm. I was interviewing and like that sort of like,
Yeah.
All right, so this last question is totally just for fun, but is there anything that you've read or watched or listened to recently that you've really enjoyed?
Yeah, there is a book that I just read from an HBS professor, and I know you're probably thinking like, oh, this is like a business school or like a business or leadership book. I was really intrigued because it's actually a work of fiction. Huh. So this is Deepak Malhotra, who's this amazing, actually, negotiations professor on our faculty, and he's definitely written a bunch of negotiations books and has a very popular course.
Mm-hmm.
But he just wrote a novel called Peacemaker's Code, and I was so intrigued that one of our professors professors wrote a piece of fiction. So I read the book, and I'll try not to do any spoilers, but it's a really great book. I recommend it. It's this like page turner kind of national security kind of thriller book. But what he does very smartly is weaves throughout it these principles of negotiation. So I felt like I was, one, being entertained, and two, learning. I was like, oh, okay, I got it. It's something I read recently and can recommend. It's a really, really fun book. And also you might learn something in it too.
Wow. Okay. That sounds really, yeah, I'm going to note this, and cause I need a couple of books for the summer for some vacation reading. So,
that sounds great. Reading. Yeah.
Cool. Well, Chad, I really appreciate you making time. I know you have a really busy schedule, and it sounds like you're going to be running a half marathon tomorrow. So thanks for making time, to chat, and yeah, just really a pleasure to connect with you and hear your answers to these questions.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Graham. Thank you so much for having me.
So please stay tuned to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions podcast for more admissions director Q&As, as well as our weekly Wiretaps episodes. And as always, thanks for rating and reviewing this podcast wherever you listen.